Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek, Tennessee podcast, y'all. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Roger Byron. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. Hey, if you're listening and you like what you hear, please hit the like and subscribe button. Leave a comment. It helps us a lot, and thanks for doing it. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Roger Byron. Roger is senior counsel at First Liberty. As a religious freedom attorney, his practice focuses on First Amendment matters and other civil rights issues in federal and state courts. He regularly counsels clients on equal access, establishment clause, church and state matters, religious land use, free speech, free exercise, and religious discrimination in employment. His clients, while at First Liberty, include the Knights of Columbus, the American Legion, International Conference of Police Chaplains, a Native American sweat lodge, synagogues, churches, religious organizations and clubs, and various government entities. In addition to legal counsel, Roger implements media strategies on clients' behalf and has appeared on television and radio stations around the country. Before practicing law, Roger graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy and served a six-year commission as a surface warfare officer in the U.S. Navy. Thank you for your service. After his military service, he graduated magna cum laude from Regent University School of Law, where he served as articles editor of Regent University Law Review. Mr. Byron, how are you today?
Hello, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. It is a sunny day here in Tennessee. Where are you calling us from?
Plano, Texas.
Plano, Texas. What kind of weather are you getting?
Warm.
Warm, absolutely. Well, it's going to get warmer as the year progresses, I'm told. So you played a key role as co-counsel for the First Liberty litigation team that successfully defended a World War I memorial cross threatened with destruction because of its religious symbolism, which culminated in a major First Amendment victory at the U.S. Supreme Court in the American Legion versus American Humanist Association. And other include Walsh versus Georgia Department of Public Health, which secured justice for a Seventh-day Adventist pastor and physician who lost his job as a public health official for expressing his religious beliefs in his sermons, AHA versus Matawan Aberdeen Regional School District, which protected the rights of public schools to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Thanks for doing that for us. And Brooks versus City of Utica, which secured relief for a practicing Nazarite and city firefighter whose safety was endangered because of his religious practice. How do you feel about the Department of Justice's war on Christianity and the memo they walked back at the FBI declaring Latin Mass an indicator of white supremacy and therefore cause for investigation?
Well, that's a tough one. I know our the victory that you mentioned a few minutes ago, the Peace Cross victory, the World War I Veterans Memorial, was a groundbreaking matter that I think we'll talk directly into that. In that we represented the American Legion, who's been our client for a number of years, and we defended a 40-foot-tall cross-shaped World War I Veterans Memorial that had been up for almost 100 years. At this point, it has been 100 years. But at the time of the litigation, it was almost 100 years. And it was being threatened with destruction or removal simply because it was in the shape of a cross, like many, many World War I memorials are, and sitting on government property. We were able to, partnering with Jones Day, the international law firm, as part of our litigation team, we were able to take that, like you said, all the way to the Supreme Court and lay the groundwork for additional victories that have happened since then, in the Establishment Clause area, in the separation of church and state area. With American Legion, we helped solidify the idea that longstanding monuments or government practices or symbols or what have you have a presumption of lawfulness, a presumption of constitutionality under the First Amendment, instead of what effectively was a presumption of unlawfulness for almost 50 years prior to that. And since American Legion, we've seen some additional victories in that area. And, whatever hostility toward religious freedom we may be seeing today will be better met and better seen to and better countered because of the American Legion victory and additional victories that First Liberty and others have had.
You mentioned the Establishment Clause and the separation of church and state. This church separation of church and state isn't actually in the Constitution. It was a letter written by Thomas Jefferson, I believe, to some Baptists or some such. You can tell me more if you can. How did it ever become such a clause issue as a defense of something that you said very clearly had been a presupposition of innocence, let's just say, religious worship for so long? When did that connection happen?
It began primarily with the Supreme Court using it in the early 20th century when we began seeing Establishment Clause decisions against longstanding practices. And when the Supreme Court does something, the lower courts pick it up, and then it became part of the popular culture to the point that, that any type of government action or tradition or symbol or what have you that even smacked of religion or had anything to do with it was automatically suspect. All that has changed now, however. It began changing with the Supreme Court, most notably with the Town of Greece victory, Town of Greece versus Galloway, which yet again upheld what's called legislative prayer, which is the right of legislative government bodies to open their meetings with prayer, with an invocation if they choose to do so. Then American Legion built on that. And then just last year, we broke the dam wide open with our victory in Kennedy versus Bremerton School District, where we defended and represented as a plaintiff a football coach from Bremerton, Washington, who decided that it was his conviction that he would take a knee on the 50-yard line after games by himself and offer a silent prayer, and ended up being being fired for that.
We actually had Coach Joe Kennedy on this show in October. As a matter of fact, he had just won his Supreme Court, thanks to you, and he had not yet been reinstated. But I'm happy to say that he has now been reinstated and basically defended all of our rights to freely pray in public if we so choose. And you were right there with him, weren't you?
Yeah, First Liberty was certainly in our litigation team. The importance of Kennedy, I don't think, can be overstated. For 50 years prior to Kennedy, the standard that the court would use to determine whether something was an unlawful establishment of religion was very hostile to religious practice. It was called the Lemon Test. The court would look at the purpose for the government action, the effect of the government action, whether the government action entangled itself in religion in an unlawful way, whether the government endorsed religion somehow. But at the end of the day, it became an outcome determinative test to the point that it became apparent, at least to me, that a court could determine what it wanted the outcome of the case to be and tailor its analysis to that outcome. Now with Kennedy, however, the court has made very clear that it has left Lemon behind in the dust. It is literally, quote unquote, abandoned Lemon, the court's words, and now to determine the lawfulness of a government action or a government law or government whatever under the Establishment Clause, courts have to look at history, tradition, and the original meaning of the Constitution. In other words, we're back to looking at what we should have been looking at all along.
Oh my goodness, I was on mute. Sorry about that.
There you go. That's better. I can read lips, but I didn't quite catch all of that.
Yes. Okay. Well, my question was, so he has been reinstated and that's fantastic, but we still have the mob after, say, the Colorado Baker again and again, even after a Supreme Court win. Your group represents Christian Bakers, Aaron and Melissa Klein from Sweet Cakes by Melissa. At the heart of this conflict are a few key questions. Can the government force you to act against your conscience? Can it? Because it keeps trying.
Well, that's what we're fighting to determine and to make sure that it can. I mean, Aaron and Melissa Klein, that's the Sweet Cakes by Melissa matter. A wonderful family who had a family business, a family bakery, and they were forced to shut it down because the fines that the state assessed against it were ruinous. They literally lost their business, literally lost their livelihood, simply because they could not in good conscience make a cake specifically to celebrate a wedding that violated their religious convictions. I mean, they're willing to serve anyone of any persuasion, but they couldn't help celebrate something that flew in the face of what they believed to be good and right and true. And they've stood strong, and they've paid for it. It's been almost a decade, literally, and we're still fighting to be sure that they get justice.
And Coach Kennedy's was 8 years, so these things do take a lot of time, and sometimes they say the process is the punishment by just forcing these people into the legal realm to defend themselves, a right that we were given inalienably or in the Constitution, not upheld if you have to pay a lawyer a lot of money and a lot of time to defend that right. But once it is done, it should be at least precedent and appreciated by all, but they keep coming back. Or going after parents with the Patriot Act and calling them domestic terrorists.
We've had a couple of Establishment Clause matters in Tennessee over the past year. Mm-hmm. Like the first one that I remember was Elizabethton. There still is actually a cross display in the city of Elizabethton, which I think, is that over in Knoxville? I think it is.
It is on Eastern Tennessee.
Yeah, they've had a three cross display on Lynn Mountain, which either sits, I think, just outside the town. And they received a complaint letter, which many counties and many municipalities do over the time, from kind of one of the usual suspects, alleging that this display, simply having this display on this mountain outside of town, violated the Establishment Clause. However, as is often the case, that particular complaint left out the most important part of the law. They left out the American Legion decision completely, which changed the law completely for displays just of that kind. And what you'll find over time is that many cities and many counties, the civic leaders very often don't have the stomach for conflict. They will receive a complaint letter like that, and they'll just fold and capitulate and do whatever the complaint alleges, regardless of whether they have to, regardless of even if it's lawful. I mean, some of these letters are encouraging the governments to do things that are literally unlawful. But thankfully, and not surprisingly, in Eastern Tennessee, the Elizabethton wouldn't have any of it. We reached out to the town and explained the law to them, and the crosses are still there to this day.
And it only took one complaint, right? It's not like it's a mob of 1,000 people screaming with pitchforks. They just... one complaint, and all of a sudden the city council runs with it.
So the standard procedure for matters like that is that either somebody local will see something that they don't like, that they think maybe might smack of religion, or maybe, you know, could be an Establishment Clause issue, and then they'll contact one of a handful of groups that send out these letters. There's one group that sends out maybe 1,000 or more a year. That's primarily what they do. They rarely ever actually follow up on those complaints with any legal action. Number one, because many of their complaints don't hold water, and the ones that do, they're just not really fit to litigate them very often. So my advice to any civic leaders that may see this interview or see this podcast is, number one, you get a letter like that, don't panic. Number two, don't respond. There's no obligation to respond to a complaint letter. And very often a response will simply put you farther up on their list of people to follow up with and give them an opportunity to respond to your response and get even more media coverage for the event.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. And then number three, you know, reach out to First Liberty. It's firstliberty.org. And we help so many towns and municipalities and counties with issues like that. And very often they can be very easily dealt with.
Yeah, so those type of situations, absolutely. But what I get concerned about is when the government actually acts on behalf on their own without even some agitator or non-legal doctrine, like using the Patriot Act to going after parents and calling them domestic terrorists. Have you seen any of this in your defense?
Well, we get all kinds of requests for help, and certainly using something like the Patriot Act to go after parents and parental rights is something it can't be tolerated. That reminds me of a matter that we have right now. We represent a young man who is now a former police officer from Georgia named Jacob Kersey. He's the he's been described by a friend of mine as the kind of guy that you'd want your daughter to bring home. Just an upstanding, very young man. He's in his early 20s. And he began his career as a police officer with, I think it was a town in Georgia. Was it Port Wentworth? Yeah, Port Wentworth, Georgia, just last year. And by all accounts, was just having an outstanding career and just doing a great job. And last month, he posted on his own private Facebook page the following three sentences. God designed marriage. Marriage refers to Christ and the church. That's why there's no such thing as homosexual marriage. End quote. So he was literally just summarizing the basic Orthodox Christian belief about marriage for the last 2,000 years. And of course, the Judeo understanding for thousands of years before that. And he got called on the carpet for it.
In Georgia.
In Georgia. And he had a number of meetings. His police department wanted him to take it down, and he refused. He said, I can't take that down. I can't do that. What I put up there is true. And eventually the chief told him that posting the Orthodox Christian belief on his private Facebook page was the same thing as saying the N-word and to F all those homosexuals. Kid you not.
Was that a black police chief by chance?
The position of the police department then at the time, according to the chief, is that, the basic Orthodox Christian belief about marriage is no better than a racial epithet.
Right.
So there's a slight problem. And eventually, Jacob had to make the decision to resign from the police force. He could see that, serving in this police department was directly contradictory to his own basic Christian beliefs and the beliefs that Christians have and still hold today and have for thousands of years at this point. So we represent him. There is a bit of a problem. It's blatantly unlawful to discriminate against an employee based on his religious beliefs, which is what's happened here. It's unlawful under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act, both for government employers and for private employers to do that. And then when you have a government employer like you have here, a police station, that throws in all the First Amendment problems as well for speech and free exercise. So we're very happy to represent Jacob in this, and we're hoping that the city of Point Wentworth will do the right thing.
Hope so too.
If they won't, they may find themselves in a very difficult position.
Yeah. What about all the conscientious objectors or religious exemptions in the military, National Guard, or employees of companies that didn't want the experimental COVID jab?
Well, that's a huge issue. I mean, there's been a ton of litigation over that. One of our cases, we represent, it's 35 U.S. Navy SEALs and special warfare operators specifically who simply could not take the COVID-19 vaccine due to their religious convictions. And if you know anything about the Navy SEALs or, Naval Special Warfare, these are the Navy's commandos. And the estimate is it takes something like $2 million a man to train these guys.
Yeah.
And get them ready. And they were going to be forced out of the military simply because they couldn't take the COVID-19 vaccine because of their religious convictions. Now, the Navy had granted medical exemptions to the COVID-19 vaccination requirement. In other words, they said, okay, if you've got a medical issue with taking the COVID-19, that's all right. We're not going to, we have a problem with that. Oh, you got a religious issue and you're asking for the exact same thing? Sorry, we're going to force you out. Some of them were facing maybe even more dire consequences than that. We filed suit, representing these men, and the suit turned into a class action, not just for them, but also for all naval personnel. There were thousands of them who simply couldn't take the vaccine because of their religious convictions. That all they wanted was the same treatment that the people that were granting the medical, that were asking for the medical convictions or exemptions were getting. We just want to be treated like the sailors, like them. We're asking for the exact same thing. And, you know, the Navy wasn't doing it.
No.
However, at this point, you know, a very good development has happened. The Navy has announced that it's no longer going to require or allow commanders to use the COVID-19 vaccination status when they're assessing whether a sailor is ready for deployment or other operations. So that's really good news.
It is. And thanks to you. Since 1997, over 1 million U.S. military service members have worn shields of strength, replica dog tags inscribed with Bible verses to inscribe and encourage our men and women as they face the dangers of war. I wear a shield of strength cross every day. You can see it on Rumble. It says, "For I can do anything through Christ who gives me strength." I bought it the day the military canceled the contract because I'm supportive like that. The deceptively named Military Religious Freedom Foundation had them removed simply because they have a religious message. First Liberty filed a motion seeking to stop the Department of Defense from enforcing its discriminatory policy, which prevents Shields from producing and distributing military-themed replica dog tags. How is that case going?
That's going well. We're waiting on the court to decide a motion for us, and we're very happy to represent Shields of Strength there. I mean, our firm is a little unique, I think, in that we have men in our firm that have served in all four branches of the standard U.S. military: the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines. And so we understand in a way that you can, if you haven't served, you know what something like that could mean to someone. And the Shields of Strength have been very popular particularly with military personnel that have been deployed to the desert in all these years. It served as these dog tags with these encouraging messages, some of them based in scripture, some of them based in other things, have been a huge encouragement to many of our service members. And we hope that we're able to successfully represent Shields of Strength here and let them get back to making their dog tags and encouraging our service members.
There you go. That's actually how I found it. I found out about you besides Joe Kennedy, even before that. Another recent case of yours in front of County Judge Downing Bowles at the Taylor County, Texas Commissioner's Court received a letter from an anti-religious legal group, like we said, probably one Karen. Among other things, the letter complained about various employees displaying in county offices, such as crosses and Bible verses, county employees displayed at their desks. These displays, the group alleged, violated the law and must be removed. Did it violate the law and did they get removed? How is that going?
It's actually one of those situations that I mentioned earlier where the complaint letter was literally encouraging the local government to engage in unlawful behavior. If an employer is allowing its employees to have individual displays on their desks or little posters in their workspaces or books on their desk or what have you that come from some type of secular point of view, it is unlawful for that employer to take someone that has a religious poster up or maybe a Bible sitting on their desk and tell them, "You can't do that." This other guy, "Yeah, you can have your baseball poster up, but you can't have your Jesus poster up." And if the county had followed through on what the letter was demanding it to do, it could have found itself on the losing side of a very clear-cut Title VII employment discrimination case. But thankfully, Taylor County was one of the few municipalities to have a little backbone, and they followed the right course of action. They looked at the allegations. They did their homework. They listened to some advice that we provided them, and they determined that what they were being asked to do was not the appropriate way to go. They held their ground, and they're still there today.
That's the beautiful resolution, unlike the millions spent in Bremerton to try to keep Coach Joe from praying, which is just so ludicrous. Here in Franklin, in Williamson County, Tennessee, they want to stop a prayer worship in the town square in the evening after 5 p.m., I think, for amplified noise. The mayor and sheriff seem not to want to enforce that ordinance and stop them, probably thinking along the lines you just said, like, it isn't worth that can of worms. But of course, anti-religious folks want them to stop. What are your thoughts on freedom of worship versus city noise ordinances?
In a situation like that, the government has to be very, very careful, or it will find itself on the wrong side, the losing side of a civil rights lawsuit. I mean, when we're talking about government property like a public square or a public park or the sidewalks and streets, that is what the courts determine is a public forum, a traditional public forum for speech and interaction. And a government is very limited in how it can restrict free speech, whether it's religious speech or any other kind of speech, in a public forum like that. And so if the government is allowing other people at other times or at the same kind of times to show up and have gatherings in that same area and to talk about whatever it is they want to talk about and use amplification, then if it tries to keep someone from doing that who's speaking from a religious point of view, that's unlawful. That's unlawful religious viewpoint discrimination. That is one of the most clear-cut First Amendment violations. And if that happens, I want you to tell me, because I would love that case. I would love to have that case.
I will
it
tell
would be
you.
A fish, it would be a fish in the barrel type situation. So see, my advice to that government would be tread very carefully. Yeah. And just allow the folks to do what you've already allowed them to do.
And you bring up an excellent point. One fear I have and a trend I'm seeing is the Satanic Church and Planned Parenthood are teaming up to sue on religious grounds, things like satanic statues on state property and abortion for satanic rituals, as if it's a religious freedom right, like in the First Amendment, Fourth Amendment. Do you see this as gathering steam in liberal courts, or am I blowing it out of proportion?
It's not going to amount to much. I mean, that's the way free speech is. You know, the whole purpose of the First Amendment is not to protect popular views, not to protect views that are popular with the government. The purpose of the First Amendment, the free speech clause or the free exercise clause, is to protect speech and exercise that's not popular. You know, let freedom ring. And everything that went with that, you know, comes immediately to mind. And so it doesn't bother me a bit that beliefs or convictions or speech of all kinds is allowed in the public square. It should be. And the truth's going to win out. Now, does a government have to allow, you know, a permanent display of, you know, whatever on its own property that it doesn't want? No, it does not. Okay, there is no forum for speech, for private speech, for free speech in permanent monuments. The Supreme Court's been very clear about that. And so, I mean, unless a government is literally having an all-comers policy that says, whoever wants to put up a monument here in the park, just throw it in there, let us know, we'll put it up. I mean, there's no obligation, you know, for that government entity to allow anybody to put up whatever they want. You know, once someone gives something to the government, it becomes the government's property. And if the government displays it, it's government speech. It's the government speaking through that display. And the government, just like the rest of us, can decide what it wants to say and what it doesn't.
But what about a situation where, like, Governor Gavin Newsom from California purchased from private companies billboard space to be pro-abortion, pro-abortion sanctuary state California in red states using Bible verses, offending a lot of people, yet there's this quasi-government private freedom of speech mismatch to say something that most people wouldn't like, but yet he has the right to say it? Is that what you're saying?
The First Amendment protects everyone's right to say what they want to say. Now, let me qualify that. A lot of people think the First Amendment means that you can say anything you want to anybody at any time, and nobody can hold you accountable for it. That is not true. The First Amendment protects you from the government doing bad things to you when you express your point of view. Now you can't say anything you want. You know, you can't commit perjury. The government will come after you, and she'll come after you for committing perjury. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. You know, slander is actionable. There are a number of things that you may want to say that are actionable. But in general, the First Amendment means that if you have an unpopular viewpoint or a popular viewpoint or one the government doesn't like, the government cannot use its power and its influence to harm you or to dissuade you from saying that. If they do, that is a First Amendment violation that is actionable in a court of law. That's what the First Amendment protects. Now, if someone wants to put up messages on billboards that are otherwise lawful and they're unpopular, the First Amendment allows them to do that. If someone wants to stop a government official from, you know, passing, I mean, I don't know what exactly is going on with Governor Newsom. I don't know who's sponsoring all that. But if it's otherwise valid, you know, if it's not unlawful the way it's being gone about, then the First Amendment is going to protect his right to do that. And the way to counter that is not in a court of law. The way to counter that is at the ballot box.
Right. Although Oklahoma doesn't have the ability to vote for Gavin unless he runs for president. And you know, so it did definitely muddy the waters from my mind. Now, when you defend a religious case for Christians or Jews or Muslims' rights, who do you come up against? It's obviously not the United States of America and the attorney generals, but who are you fighting against most of the time? Or are you seeing any specific groups that are causing you the most pushback?
Well, a civil rights action is going to be almost exclusively against a government, a city government or a county government, a state official, occasionally, you know, against a federal official. And so we're primarily a plaintiff's firm. So we take individuals or groups or houses of worship and we sue the government on their behalf. Now, we also will defend government entities, like the Establishment Clause matters we were talking about earlier, the separation of church and state matters. In those matters, our clients will be government entities. Or they will be private entities that intervene in a case to help a government defend itself. In matters like that, you'll consistently see, you know, a handful of anti-religion groups that find plaintiffs and try to bring suit against very often small government entities that they think will be, you know, easy pushovers, and that they'll be able to eventually make them acquiesce to their demands.
Here at Vanderbilt University, they were performing gender-affirming care, aka genital mutilation, on minors until they paused. We'll see if laws banning it are passed. But my question is, how do we legislate culture? And with public colleges like A&M and Ohio State investing heavily in diversity, equity, inclusion, how do we balance freedom of speech, as you're talking about, and freedom of religion against a backdrop of loose cultural morals?
Well, I think the gender transition surgery issue is eventually going to take care of itself. I mean, already there are suits from individuals who have either undergone some or all a gender transition procedure, who are suing the counselors that cleared their way. They will be suing the medical professionals that mutilated them. And the day is coming when the delusion will end and the medical profession will see we can't continue doing this to these people. They need another kind of help. They don't need this type of surgery. They don't need this type of transition. I mean, that it's going to take care of itself, and it's already starting. Okay. So just basic, I think it's basic malpractice suits, basic standard of care standards.
And there's a lot of victims apparently. So you're right. This week, a name from the past, Christine Blasey Ford, admitted she lied and never met Brett Kavanaugh after accusing him of some awful stuff, tearing the country apart and slandering a Supreme Court judge nominee. And according to Reuters this week, some witnesses may have lied under oath during a grand jury probe of former President Donald Trump's efforts to overturn his 2020 election defeat in Georgia. We know the FBI lied to the FISA court. We know Biden and mainstream media lied about Hunter's laptop from hell, I guess. I want to know, is it illegal to lie to a judge or Congress anymore? All of these things should be prosecuted.
Do you want me to I thought that was just kind of a self-answering question. Yeah,
I'd love to hear your thought on all these people getting away with perjury. Yeah.
Yeah, perjury is still illegal. And, you know, if perjury has been committed, then the law enforcement officer, the whoever it may be, the attorney general of that particular state or whoever it may be, needs to pursue that.
Okay. Is First Liberty involved in any of those? You defend, not. Right? No, okay. So, but First Liberty also backs judges. Clifton Coker confirmed Chip Campbell, Eli Richardson here in Middle Tennessee, and a few more Tennesseans. The longest serving Democrat on the Tennessee Supreme Court retired, and Governor Lee appointed Dwight Tarwater, a partner at Payne Tarwater Bickers from Knoxville. Do you know him and have any opinion on how he'll do? Why I ask is it's a very unique situation here where the Supreme Court actually picks the Attorney General in Tennessee. That's not normal in most states that I'm aware of.
I don't think it is either. I mean, states are free to decide how they want to choose their public officials. You know, the judges in most states are actually elected, whereas in the federal court system, they're appointed. Some states will appoint them. Some states have kind of a hybrid of the two. The judge will initially get appointed, and then after so many years, he has there is an election to determine if the voters want to keep him, though there's no one running against that judge. I'm not familiar with the judge that you're talking about, but I hope he does.
Okay.
I hope he does a great job.
Me too. The PREP Act gave all vaccine producers immunity for injuries caused by COVID. When the U.S. government purchased COVID-19 vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, it contractually agreed to keep the PREP Act immunity in place for as long as their vaccines are used by the United States. The vaccine is now on the list of childhood immunization schedule, even though study after study shows kids don't need it and it actually causes harm. I think Pfizer committed fraud in their trials to get emergency use authorization, and mRNA should be banned from the world. Have you looked at fraud nullifying PREP Act immunity for liabilities for vaccine injured and death?
No, that is not something that we would do. I mean, our mission is very focused on religious freedom. And, you know, we take matters that both defend and move the ball forward on religious freedom in the public arena, in the workplace, for our churches and other religious organizations, in our schools and in our military. And if it doesn't fit, you know, within that bailiwick, that is usually not something we're involved in. It's okay. Actually, it's plenty to keep us busy.
Yeah. Just one last question about that. Those folks, Joe Biden hasn't really been upholding his sworn commitment to uphold the Constitution. Do you think he's done anything that could not only be impeachable, but enough to be removed by the Senate, unlike Clinton or Trump?
I hope not. I hope he hasn't done anything that's impeaching.
Okay. Have you heard of the Declaration of North America? DNA? Have you heard of that?
I have not.
So it's kind of a disaster for our border, which I would think is impeachable for not defending our border. But President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, President Joe Biden, and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau met in Mexico City for the 10th North American Leaders Summit. The leaders are determined to fortify our religious security, prosperity, sustainability, and inclusiveness through commitments across six pillars, mostly diversity, equity, and inclusion, climate change and the environment, competitiveness, migration and development, health and regional security. The commitments made during the summit are rooted in a shared vision for a more equitable, just, inclusive, resilient, secure, and prosperous North America, and a shared responsibility to achieve more equitable outcomes responsive to the needs and aspirations of our citizens. Lastly, as we work to implement these commitments in the coming year, we seek to model a democratic and sustainable path on trust to promote inclusive prosperity and security. Mexico, the United States, and Canada look forward to building on the progress of the 11th NALS to be hosted by Canada. That's not America first. That's not defending our borders. That's not helping with the immigration or illegal immigration crisis we currently have. Are you doing anything on the ground on the border states for illegal immigration?
We are not. Okay. One thing we are doing, though, is what we're calling a Restoring Faith in America project. With the wins we've had this last year, like in the Kennedy win and the American Legion win, the doors have been opened to take things that have been done in the United States throughout a lot of our history, but in the last 50 years have been more difficult to do and restore them, whether they're Ten Commandments displays on government property or a cross display, you know, on government property, or legislative prayer, specifically county governments or city governments or state legislatures deciding that we're going to follow the 200 plus year tradition in this country and in our state and open our sessions with an invocation. Or if it's having Bible classes in school or what they call release time education, where students with their parents' permission can leave a public school and go to somewhere off the public school grounds and receive religious instruction, i.e. Sunday school or whatever their religious tradition may be. But we're encouraging government entities and individuals to take this window of opportunity when the doors have been open and specifically because the basic constitutional right of religious freedom has been restored in many ways, and specifically in the Establishment Clause arena. And it's a good opportunity to not only do things now that weren't possible for the last 50 years, but to rediscover things that could have been done, but were unpopular or unheard of, or people were too afraid to pursue them and pursue. We have, there's a window now, an opportunity to take advantage of so many of these things that can be done now or could have already be done, and to get them in place.
Excellent. Well, I got time for one more question. I think about 2 minutes left. Kyle Rittenhouse is now being sued by one of his attackers that he shot. He won his original self-defense case. Won't discovery prove he's innocent just again? And wouldn't his attacker, Gage Grosskreutz, I think his name is, by opening himself up to liability for assault or attempted murder even? Isn't that called double jeopardy? Do you know anything about this?
You'd have to talk to a criminal attorney for that. That's not an area of the law that I've done much in. But I can encourage anyone that is, you know, interested in religious freedom matters or religious liberty or any of the matters that we do. I mean, we have a case right now before the U.S. Supreme Court representing a former United States postal worker employee who lost his job because he could not work on the Sabbath. I mean, he went to work for the post office because it was closed on Sundays. And then, you know, the Postal Service took a big contract from Amazon and began requiring employees to work on Sundays. And his religious conviction is he simply cannot do that. And as the law requires, he was given a religious accommodation to not to have to work on Sundays, but, you know, to do that work at other times. That accommodation was taken away and he lost his job. And the Supreme Court is going to look at this case. And very likely is going to rule in our client's favor. So if you're interested in matters like that or just religious freedom in general, there's a lot happening at First Liberty. It's a fascinating area to look into. And just firstliberty.org is the place to go, firstliberty.org.
Awesome. Are there any other places to go to see a blog by you or any other social that you'd like to tell everyone about?
No, everything starts there, just firstliberty.org.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for coming on with us. We really appreciate it so much. Good luck with all those cases and doing that for us. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, great. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Thank you. I don't know. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what'd you think of our guest, Roger Byron of FirstLiberty.org?
Well, their organization and he and himself and all the people working for him are doing a wonderful job of going to bat for people like Coach Kennedy and all these others and people in the military who have been basically become punching bags for the elite left, the God haters out there. And he's won cases, which is great, and he's setting precedent, which is going to actually affect the future. And I have to admit, I agree with the whole trans thing. I believe it's going to burn itself out over a period of time, because you can. There's only so many people who are going to go that route, and then there's already people that are coming out of the woodwork and just saying, my life has been destroyed, and I'm going to sue. And I think when we see that, that's where the change is going to happen. I think we're just barely seeing that with the vaccines and the mandates for the masking. But lawsuits are being mounted all over the United States, and I think in the long run, a lot of people better go to jail and or be sued out of business.
That's the only way to make it stop, is obviously to give real world consequences to bad actors, and we have not seen a lot of that in the Nancy Pelosi, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton era of crime and justice. So, hey, Steve, we can ring the bell. Ding, ding, ding. We got our very first 55 episodes in. First, numero uno, number one with a gun, primero, first comment on Rubble for a show. Ooh. As promised, I'm going to read it on the air. Ready? Hold on now. Here goes. Smith Pate says, love the interview with Kirk Cameron. Okay. Thank you, Smith Pate. I enjoyed doing the interview with my childhood TV imaginary bestie, so I'm glad you liked it. I'm especially glad you loved it. We love you too, Smith Pate. Okay. You can write to me too on Rumble or iTunes or steve@mcview.us, and I just might read your constructive criticism too. Don't be nasty. The world is dark enough. Steve, I mentioned to our guest the DNA, or Declaration of North American, announced January 10th, 2023. Declaration of North America. Y'all should Google it and read the whole thing. You'll be shocked and outraged, but let me read real quick from it. Diversity, equity, and inclusion is foundational to the strength, vibrancy, and resilience of our countries. We focus on providing marginalized communities opportunities for their full, equal, and meaningful participation in our democracies and economies. To advance these objectives, President Lopez Obrador, President Biden, and Prime Minister Trudeau reinstated their joint commitment to protect civil rights, promote racial justice, expand protections for LGBTQI+ individuals, and deliver more equitable outcomes to all. That doesn't sound like we the people. In partnership with Indigenous peoples, we will promote innovative and sustainable solutions. So much gobbledygook that honor traditional knowledge, foster Indigenous-led growth, and drive job creation. We will continue our cooperation to build societies where Indigenous women and girls can live, learn, and lead without fear through the Trilateral Working Group on Violence Against Indigenous Women and Girls. Indigenous women from all three countries will convene in the coming weeks to facilitate discussions about priorities and best practices, including in areas of political, economic, and social development. The three countries also reaffirm our commitment to gender equality and empower of women and girls in all their diversity by aiming to improve financial and political support for women and girls' rights. The only thing missing is and justice for all. What in the heck is going on here? Let's play clip number one.
Is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are black?
White America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, They don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps. But it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
The Irish were actually brought in, by the way. The Irish were slaves.
Yeah, and the Chinese. Who said that?
That was Martin Luther King Jr.
Right. In 2008, United States Commission on Civil Rights finds Black American men with education rates lower than the average American are disproportionately employed in the low-skilled labor market where they are more likely to be in labor competition with immigrants, the commission report states. Illegal immigration to the United States in recent decades has tended to depress both wages and employment rates for low-skilled American citizens, a disproportionate number of whom are Black men. Expert economic opinions concerning the negative effects range from modest to significant. Those panelists that found modest effect overall nonetheless found significant effects in industry sectors such as meatpacking and construction. But Black Lives Matter, right? Black Americans, in many cases, have seen their circumstances get worse. In a recent example, a group of Black Americans lost their agricultural jobs to imported South African visa workers along the Mississippi Delta. The Black Americans settled their discrimination claims against their former employers. Let's hear clip number two.
You know, these guys sort of don't, they all think they have this illusion of choice. Like, I can do whatever I want to do. And we kind of have a younger generation now that doesn't always get told no. They don't always get told this is exactly how you need to do it. So they have this illusion that they have all these choices. But the fact of the matter is if you want to be good, you really don't have a lot of choices because it takes what it takes. You have to do what you have to do to be successful. So you have to make the choices and decisions to have the discipline and the focus to the process of what you need to do to accomplish your goals. And all these guys that think they have a lot of choices are really, you know, sort of sadly mistaken. And I think, as we all have done with our own children, they learn these lessons of life as they get older. And sometimes the best way to learn is from the mistakes that you make, even though we all hate to see them have to make them. And we don't really condone it when they do.
So that's Alabama head coach Nick Saban. I thought that message of illusion of choice, really bad choices, and learning from mistakes was a good one. Mainstream media makes bad choices and is learning the hard way. It loses money and costs jobs. Over 200 NBC and MSNBC employees are planning a 24-hour walkout Thursday in protest of the company's decision to lay off unionized journalists. The Washington Post has begun eliminating positions after losing 500,000 subscribers since Trump left office. CNN fired hundreds of staffers in December. After 9 years, YouTube CEO Susan Wojcicki, I think it's pronounced, I don't know, said Thursday she is stepping back from her leadership role at the company after nearly a decade of running the video sharing platform. Wojcicki said she plans to start a new chapter focused on my family, health, and personal projects. They always say that. You may have noticed we purposely don't post our Mill Creek View shows on YouTube. We don't out of protest for censoring content and demonetizing conservatives and mostly honest views. Maybe if the new CEO, Neil Mohan, changes their way like Elon Musk did Twitter, kind of, we'll consider it, but no rush. Doing fine on Rumble, where they don't censor. I won't hold my breath. Let's listen to this mini documentary entitled The Typhoid Mary of Disinformation on how much Nicole Wallace of CNN reflexively spreads lies.
The Havana syndrome, headaches, and a loud noise, clearly acts of aggression, acts of war.
Scientists say the sounds were crickets.
The Havana syndrome. Our enemies might be weaponizing technology, beaming something to hurt people's brains. The claims are scientifically implausible.
Donald Trump to now investigate a conspiracy theory about COVID coming from a lab in Wuhan.
This theory needs to be investigated, which is what President Biden is doing.
Hunter Biden's laptop reveals emails.
We shouldn't look at it as anything other than a Russian disinformation operation.
The Hunter Biden laptop material is genuine.
The murder of a police officer, Officer Brian Sicknick, was killed in the line of duty. They beat a Capitol Police officer to death.
Officer Sicknick died of natural causes.
The Steele dossier. It may be dirty, but it ain't fake.
Obviously, the Steele dossier is discredited by far, actually.
I mean, this is the lunatic response to what is a very rational, evidence-based, fact-based investigation.
FBI pleads guilty to doctoring email.
What the report shows is something that won't be surprising to people that have spent a lot of time in the federal government.
The report left former officials aghast.
The FBI is exonerated today.
It doesn't vindicate anyone at the FBI who touched this.
They are all absolved of any wrongdoing.
The activities we found here don't vindicate anybody.
The Trump administration cleared peaceful Black Lives Matter protesters so the president could take a photo in front of a church.
We did not find evidence that federal agents used CS gas. The D.C. police used the CS gas.
Protesters were gassed to clear the way for Trump's photo op.
Demonstrators were pushed out to allow contractors to build a fence, a response to damage done during the two previous nights of rioting.
Russians offered a bounty for the killing of U.S. soldiers.
U.S. Intel walks back claim Russians put bounties on American troops.
This mountain of evidence that we now have of bounties that Russia paid.
The Biden White House acknowledged there was little evidence.
January 6th committee's investigation into a 7-hour, 37-minute gap, possible cover-up in the records of calls, and it is no coincidence.
The call logs are complete with no missing pages. The gap is explained by use of White House landlines and cell phones.
These are the facts. Let that sink in.
Steve, that is across the board of every single mainstream orifice, period. They all have done the same exact thing. Lies, fake news.
Now the king, or at least prince, was stupid, who somehow survived Chris Cuomo's firing and Chris Wallace and Shepard Smith and Donna Brazile and so many more Trump-era fakes and phonies. Don Lemon, after losing his primetime CNN show and being demoted to CNN this morning, Lemon hit a new low when he said women 50 and older are past their prime. New low in viewers, too, listed as the 17th most popular show on CNN, while ranking as number 325 among overall television shows. That's 331,000 viewers. The competing Fox News show, Fox and Friends, had 1.3 million viewers. Let's hear clip number four. And don't
this
stop it because it makes
about
you sick.
Age makes me to uncomfortable. The whole thing. I think it's the wrong road to go down. She says people, you know, politicians or something are not in their prime. Nikki Haley isn't in her prime. Sorry. When a woman is considered to be in her prime in her 20s and 30s and maybe 40s.
What are you talking about?
That's not according to me.
Prime for what?
It depends. I mean, it's just like prime. If you look it up, if you Google when is a woman in her prime, it'll say 20s, 30s, and 40s. I don't necessarily.
40s. Oh, I got another.
I'm not saying
decade.
I agree with that. So I think she has to be careful about saying that, well, you know, politicians aren't in their prime.
We need to qualify. Are you talking about prime for like childbearing, or are you talking about
the message.
Prime
I'm just
for being
saying
president?
What the facts are. Google it, everybody at home. When is a woman in her prime? It says 20s, 30s, and 40s. And I'm just saying Nikki Haley should be careful about saying that politicians are not in their prime and they need to be in their prime when they serve, because she wouldn't be in her prime according to
Google,
you know, Google or whatever it is.
I think he got his dress cues from QI and the guys or something like that. Oh, my God. Queer and the guys. I don't know. Ugh.
Poppy Harlow temporarily walked off the set after that exchange. OutKick founder and sports writer and neighbor Clay Travis called it the dumbest thing ever said on CNN. Maybe. So did CNN fire him, Steve?
I do not think so. No.
Well, news anchor Don Lemon will return to CNN today, February 22nd, following sexist comments he made last week about women being in their prime according to their age. He has also been ordered to undergo training upon his return to air. I sat down with Don and had a frank and meaningful conversation. CNN's chief executive Chris Licht emailed employees. CNN Business reports he has agreed to participate in formal training as well as continuing to listen and learn. We take the situation very seriously. It is important to me that CNN balances accountability with fostering a culture in which people can own, learn, and grow from their mistakes. I don't think so. According to Post Millennial, female staffers at CNN threatened to walk if Don Lemon not fired. Those on the inside, however, say that the network has been literally flooded like a tidal wave with extremely angry and offended loyal viewers, probably in their late 50s. There is not one person at CNN who thinks that he should remain on air. He knows how badly he screwed up, and he also knows that he cannot talk his way out of this one. His apology meant nothing. Well, let's hear how the ladies of The View, not the Mill Creek View, but The View, feel about it.
So it's President's Day, and our current president, Biden, is starting to get more support from progressive circles. Of course, some Democrats and Republicans have been saying that our government needs to evolve along with the people who live here. Now that's what they're saying, suddenly. Everybody said, oh, yeah, it should reflect all of us. Okay. Well, here's a clip.
Gen Z and millennials make up about a third of the country, but we're nowhere near a third of the government, and think we need a government that needs to look like the country.
It's time for a new generation of Republican leadership.
The Washington establishment has failed us over and over and over again. It's time for a new generation of leadership.
You're not a new generation. You're 51. What are you talking about?
DC, that's a new generation.
Well, but it's not a new generation. She may be younger than most of those people, but her rhetoric is the same. She's saying the same BS. I love the young kid, but you know what? The only way you're going to get younger people to run, dude, is if you're out there talking to people and saying run. Don't sit here and say we need it to look like us. We know that, but we're not going to vote for people who don't have our best interests at heart. Yeah. Okay?
And also people that don't have experience. I think what's interesting in this country, and I think we're one of the only countries in the world that don't value age, don't value experience. I mean, I remember when my grandmothers were alive, I would sit at their feet and just take in the lessons and everything that they had to say. And now it's like, oh, you're too old. Well, really, because when that person is gone, so is that institutional knowledge. And it just makes me sick. I think we have a clip of Nikki Haley.
The America I see, the permanent politician will finally retire. We'll have term limits for Congress. And mandatory mental competency tests for politicians over 75 years old.
How dare she say that someone over 75 needs some sort of mental acuity?
Is that corn pone that you're talking about there? Is that me?
Whoopi Goldberg, born Karen Elaine Johnson, just back from her own troubles, repeating her anti-Semitism and saying the Holocaust wasn't about race. Those remarks were widely condemned, and in response, a number of experts detailed the Nazis' racism against Jews. And one last reminder that Joy Reid is the worst racist poison on cable TV. Clip number 6.
Florida, which I would argue, even with Texas existing, has emerged as the modern state in this country that comes the closest to a modern day version of Jim Crow. Now just hear me out. If there is a state that better exemplifies the rot of MAGA Republican rule than the state of Florida that the governor has named in very Orwellian fashion, the free state of Florida, I honestly don't know where it is, don't know what it is. I mean, Florida has it all. A law banning gay people from declaring their existence at school. Teachers can actually get fired for it. A law against anti-racist policies at work, like you have to let the racism be in the workplace or else. Book bans and requirements for patriotic Christian education propaganda in public schools. And of course, a concerted effort to make it as hard as possible for anyone who might vote for the out-of-power party, the Democrats, hashtag black people, to vote or to have representative districts. Florida's Jim Crow Redux governor, Ron DeSantis, even has his own Office of Election Crimes.
Oh, that's such awful background music, by the way, Steve. Just garbage.
Yeah, but ain't she the sweetest thing? Bless her heart. MSNBC's Joy Reid led her network with 1.34 million total viewers. Ari Melber came in second on MSNBC with 1.28 million total viewers, followed by Nicole Wallace, 1.27 million total viewers. While Reid led MSNBC, she lost her time slot to Fox News' Jesse Waters, who brought in 2.78 million total viewers. Reid did beat CNN's Aaron Burnett, however, who brought in 672,000 total average viewers, another dummy. Gallup and the Knight Foundation found that 50% of Americans believe that the news media lies in order to promote an agenda. Only 25% of Americans reject that premise. The poll also shows that 52% of Americans disagree with the statement that, in general, most national news organizations care about the best interests of their readers, views, and listeners. Only 23% agreed with that proposition. A 2021 study from the nonpartisan Pew Research Center showed a massive decline in trust among Republicans. 5 years ago, 70% of Republicans said they had at least some trust in national news organizations. In 2021, that trust was down to just 35%.
Good.
Conversely, and not surprisingly, 78% of Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents saying they have a lot or some trust in the media. When you just ask liberal Democrats, it jumps to 83%. Don't watch that crap, people. Stick with me and listen to the Mill Creek View Tennessee podcast. You'll be a happier person. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to my thought of the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or iHeart app and hit the subscribe button and follow us. And thank you for doing it. In honor of President's Day, which is really George Washington's birthday, which was yesterday and not Monday, here's some good ones. The Bible is the rock on which our republic rests. Andrew Jackson from Tennessee. It is to be regretted that the rich and powerful too often bend the axe of government to their own selfish purposes. You are a den of vipers. I intend to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out. If the people only understood the rank injustice of our money and banking system, there would be a revolution before morning. After 8 years as president, I have only two regrets: that I have not shot Henry Clay or hanged John C. Calhoun. Ah, the good old days. Henry Clay was viewed by Jackson as politically untrustworthy, an opportunistic, ambitious, and self-aggrandizing man. He believed that Clay would compromise the essentials of American Republican democracy to advance his own self-serving objectives. Jackson also developed a political rivalry with his vice president, John C. Calhoun. Throughout his term, Jackson waged political and personal war with these men, defeating Clay in the presidential election of 1832 and leading Calhoun to resign as vice president. One more. Any man worth his salt will stick up for what he believes right, but it takes a slightly better man to acknowledge instantly and without reservation that he is in error. Andrew Jackson. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Roger Byron, for defending liberty for us. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper and mcview.us website. Okay? .us, not .com, .us. Peace in our time.
County Fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.